This is Nick Treadwell, and you are listening to Nick Treadwell's Storyville. Chapter 3. Captain Bill Majors had heard propositions before, but never once so direct from someone who looked so unprofessional.
"Look, honey," he said, "I don't pay for it."
"Free," said the woman. She was skinny, closing in on 40, and pretty well level from shoulders to navel. But she had big, brown, cat-like eyes and seemed so intense. And what the heck, Bill Majors' wife was back in North Carolina. And Bill Majors was one of the top men in Special Forces, which meant, to Captain Majors, experienced at hand-to-hand combat, he had nothing to fear from anyone. And besides, he might be doing the girl a favor. She looked as if she really needed a man. He whispered in her ear,
"Okay, honey, you can eat me if you want. Your place or mine."
Her name was Sheila, she said, and she seemed quite furtive, looking over her shoulder every few moments, hiding her face from policemen who passed, letting the captain pay for the hotel room at the Copley Plaza with her money. She just didn't want the clerk to see. They got a room facing Copley Square. Trinity Church was on their right when they looked out the window. Captain Majors pulled the shades. He took off his clothes and rested his knuckles on his bare hips.
"Okay," he said. "You said you wanted to eat me. Now go ahead."
Sheila Feinberg smiled. Captain Bill Majors smiled. His smile was sexual, but hers was not. Sheila Feinberg did not take off her clothes. She kissed Majors on his hairy chest. Then she put a tongue on the chest. The tongue was moist. The skin of the chest was soft. It covered bone and muscle. Bone rich in marrow for tooth cracking, and rich red human blood. Rich like fresh whipped cream over warm cinnamon apple used to be. But this was better. Sheila opened her mouth. She licked the chest, then ran the edges of her teeth along the flesh. She could restrain herself no longer. Down came the teeth with a beautiful mouthful of human flesh. She yanked it free with a snap of her neck. Bill Majors suffered immediate shock. His hand went down on her neck, but it was a reflective and weak blow. He beat at her hard, but one did not generate much strength when incisors had gone through one's ventricum valves. From hip to sternum, Bill Major's stomach cavity was cleaned out to the last spinal lick. In an elevator going down in Copley Plaza, someone saw a woman whose dress was covered with blood and offered to help her, but the woman refused. Sheila ducked through a basement into an alley. She knew she couldn't continue like this, and yet she knew she could not stop going on like this. She was quite rational, having developed that talent in lieu of the beauty which she knew she would never have. She was no longer the biologist, no longer the daughter of Saul and Ruth Feinberg, who had gone out on hundreds of blind dates on which she had been described as a nice girl. A nice girl in her social circle was someone who didn't put out and whose looks made that job easy. She was no longer the brilliant director of Boston Biological. She was no longer the resident of Jamaica Plains with the new two-bedroom duplex, the Mediterranean furniture, and the big couch overlooking the Jamaica Way that she thought Mr. Wright might use when he came along to begin the first beautiful seduction. Technically, she was not a virgin, having experienced a man once. For Sheila Feinberg, it was a messy experience, and she knew that great big wonderful excitement she had been promised was over when the man kept saying, "Was it good for you? Was it good?" "Yeah," Sheila had said, but it was not good. And she did not like herself afterward. And later, while she continuously thirsted for the release of sex, she accepted the fact that, barring some miracle, hopefully with the pediatrician in her building who had just gotten divorced and smiled at her every morning, she would thirst until her body once dried with age. Perhaps that was why she was drawn to genetic research and the coding that made one sperm into man and the other into a tiger. Now, as she padded through the alley, her dress front blooded, she felt the release of not wanting a man sexually. And, having that release, she understood how the previous person, the one called Sheila Feinberg, had suffered from the want of a man. It was like a tight shoe being taken off. It was not the sexual relief she had read about. It was simply no longer a desire. She was not in heat. She just didn't want it anymore. She wanted to eat and sometime in the proper season mate and bear children. But her children, not the grandchildren of Saul and Ruth, but the litter Sheila, they would know how to stalk their prey. She would teach them. Boston in the spring, she thought. So many, many delicious people. She had not returned to her apartment, nor had she phoned her co-workers at Boston Biological. They were people. They would, when they understood who and what she had become, try to destroy her. People were like that. And her mind, so inordinately rational, told her the human race would send its best hunters after her. And with the instinct of everything from man to an amoeba, the one element shared by every living thing, the instinct of survival of the species, Sheila knew she must first live and then reproduce. People on the street offered to help her, and she realized she had been too slow in recollecting that a dress front covered with blood was different and drew attention. Was that changing in her head also? Was she losing the human sense of propriety? She would need that to survive among humans, just as she would need her experiments. She ducked into a small antique shop. The owner offered to call an ambulance. She said she didn't need it. She cuffed the owner into unconsciousness and locked the door. She heard a baby cry, and she did not think of swaddling it. Instead, she thought that she was not hungry at that moment. And, realizing that, and not feeling for the human baby, but with concern only for the new species that she had become, Sheila Feinberg realized in the dusty antique shop with the owner unconscious behind the counter that the last link with people had been severed. She made a list of how to survive. Individually, people without weapons were generally defenseless. As a group, the human had no match on Earth. Until now. Her features could very easily be identified. She needed new features. In the human, the male was usually the killer. She would give herself features that would disarm him. Her hand was still steady, and she was pleased with her thinking, which she feared she would lose. But as the list grew and darkness descended on Boston in the spring, she realized she was even more cunning than she had been. Breasts, she underlined the word. Hair, blonde. Waist, slim. Hips, ample. Legs, long. The big breasts would be used to lure the male of the human species. She had, either by acute rationality or by instinct, returned to the laboratory the first night to get and to hide away equipment. The first night had been very confusing. She remembered darkness coming on as she drank all the combinations. She remembered being carted in something, then realizing it was an ambulance, and when the attendant reached down to her, she saw his throat and was at it before she knew what she had done. Biologically, it was quite clear what had happened. The human body replaced its cells every 7 years. The billions of cells were changed. But why didn't a person change with the cells? Why did a nose come back as the same nose and the ears come back as the same ears and the minute fingerprints come back as the same fingerprints? There was a coding system. The genes did more than send lifetime messages through sperm and egg. They were a continuous living program, like a record, so that as long as it played, Beethoven's Fifth could never become Elton John. But melt down the material, recast the record, and you could have anything. She had discovered the way to break down the record grooves of the cells and recast them during lifetime play. Through the combination of genes and the insulation material to keep them surviving, she had discovered the recasting method. Whether or not it would take 7 years to completely remake herself, she did not know. But in the meantime, she had to live. And to live, she had to become someone other than Dr. Sheila Feinberg, homely, old maid scientist. She had to become someone that no one had ever seen before. The materials from the lab were stuffed into a corner between the ceiling and beam in the warehouse in which she had hidden herself that first terrifying night. The scientist in her had lived through that transformation, and the transformation had been rapid. She was pretty sure why. She had been highly excited, but the body had been heated up. Adrenaline was pumping at maximum flow, and the process took place in a faster-moving bloodstream. The baby cried again, and now she needed it. It was untended for long periods, she deduced. Into an alley behind the antique store she padded. She liked the night. The cry came from the second floor. Her hand fastened on a fire escape grate, and slowly with one hand she pulled herself up. Her logic told her this feat was far beyond anything she had ever been able to do before when she was fully human. If she could only get grasshopper genes, they would be far superior per ounce to those of a large cat. A grasshopper jumped more than 20 times its own height. A tiger rarely more than 3 times its length. Humans? They were almost worthless. Pound for pound, the human was one of the worst creatures physically. Mentally, however, it excelled. And the species Sheila Feinberg? It would be something totally different, and it would have the whole world for its own. The baby had gone back to sleep. It was very pink, and it had been a half day since Sheila had eaten. But her rationality was still in control. She would have to hold on to that. She could not eat this morsel. She flicked a piece of flesh from the side of the baby's eyes. The sting made it cry. Sheila backed into the shadows lest the human mother enter. There might be the father in the house. There might even be a gun. No one came. Sheila placed the baby flesh in the key solution that, when later combined with the laboratory insulation, would become the substance that could change the human recording. The baby flesh went into her mouth. The substance was saliva. That was the secret key. the thing that had enabled the tiger gene Sheila Feinberg had drunk to break through the barrier and merge with her humanity to create a new type of creature. No one came, and Sheila slid out the window, noticing that the crying human child was bleeding from its eyes. Back at the warehouse, she set up her small laboratory. It was only as wide as a rafter, but it had that essential ingredient without which all scientific research is hopeless. It had the trained mind of a scientist. She worked quickly. She isolated the solution from the baby flesh. The rafter was just cool enough to keep it alive and surviving. Then she set up her human trap. There was a payphone in the office of the warehouse. She phoned an old acquaintance. The acquaintance didn't recognize her voice, but she was, oh, so susceptible to the bait. "Look," said Sheila. "You don't know me, but I know you're pushing 50. No, no, don't get mad. I've got something for you. I can take away your eye wrinkles." "Yes, I know. A lot of women in their 30s have eye wrinkles. I can take yours away. Of course it will cost money. Lots of money, but you won't pay me till I show you it works. You'll have skin like a baby's. Is it legal?" "Illegal as hell." Sheila surprised herself at her knowledge of human nature. She had never been able to effectively be deceitful before, possibly from having a mother more effective in information gathering than the CIA. But now she had handled this woman perfectly. If she had offered the treatment free, the woman wouldn't believe it was worth anything. But when she said expensive and that it was illegal, it was too great an attraction to resist. The woman was sure she would get baby skin. Which was more than Dr. Feinberg was sure of. It had, however, a chance of working. That would lead to the second crucial step of her plan, formulated in the antique shop. And if it didn't work, well, she was going to see the woman and at least she would get a meal. The woman greeted her at the door of her fashionable Brooklyn house.
"I know you. You're that crazy Dr. Feinberg the police are looking for. You're a criminal. You're a deadly killer. You're a butcher."
"I can make you look 10 years younger," said Sheila.
"Come in," said the woman.
She furtively guided Sheila into a study. The woman was nudging 50, with full hip and breast, well fatted and marbled throughout. Dr. Feinberg suppressed her hunger. The woman had dyed red hair, very dry.
"How much money?" asked the woman.
"Lots," said Sheila. "But first let me prove what I can do."
"How do I know you won't poison me?"
"Do you think I would travel halfway across a city that is hunting me just to poison you? What's the matter with you? Who do you think you are? You think people stay up nights figuring out ways to harm you? Do you think I've got better things to do?"
"I'm sorry."
"You should be."
Sheila took a cap test tube inside a water shield from her pocketbook.
"Drink this," she said.
"You first," said the woman.
"I don't have eye wrinkles."
"I don't trust you," said the woman.
"Do you trust your eyes?"
"Yeah."
"Have they ever seen one wrinkle disappear from anybody yet? One? I mean, really disappear? Not cosmetic surgery so that your face looks like drapery when the whole thing sags. New skin. I'm talking new, unwrinkled skin."
"I've got a lot of friends. I'll be missed immediately."
"I know that," said Sheila. "That's why I chose you. You're not going to be missed. We're going to use your friends."
"What if something should go wrong?"
The woman bit a perfectly formed fingernail. It was made of soft, artificial lacquer, and it didn't bite well, but rather stretched under her teeth. Then you'll still have your wrinkles. Hey, I'm giving you young looks, human. The woman shrugged.
All of it?
Sure, said Sheila. She uncapped the top. Quickly, said Sheila. It's not that stable. All of it now.
The woman hesitated. Sheila sprang to her and dumped the tube downward over the red tongue. She clamped the jaw shut with her powerful hands and closed the nose. Then she let the jaw open and the woman swallowed reflexively as she gulped air. The woman made a face.
Ugh, that was awful. Let me wash it down with a drink or something.
Don't, said Sheila. It won't survive alcohol.
The woman blinked. She smiled. She collapsed on the white sag carpet and breathed slowly. Sheila peered at the corner of the right eye. The eye was open and the pupil stared unseeing at the ceiling. Two things would have to happen for this to work. One, Sheila's theory that each cell contained its own program and would, like a tumbler falling properly in a combination lock, go through the bloodstream to its right place. And two, speed. Sheila herself was evidence that something happened quickly. Exactly what, she was not sure. But would specific changes happen quickly? And was human saliva the key to keeping the foreign genetic material alive in a new body? She could only wait and see. The woman's eyes were covered with some light oil. Sheila rubbed it with her thumb. If Sheila were correct, not only would there be the specific change, that is, the baby's cells in their proper relationship to the rest of the body, eyes crease to crease, but, as with Sheila, a vast amount of changeover would occur almost instantaneously. It may have been her imagination or great disappointment, but the eyes suddenly seemed more wrinkled than before. Instead of a few lines, there was now a flutter of bumps like very thin paper veneer bubbled up with water. She heard the traffic outside honk for a light that lingered too long. She smelled the woman's light perfume. She touched the heavy crow's feet under the eye. The skin was dry. Sheila sighed. She had failed. She wondered for a moment if her experiments in the lab had produced not a different species as she thought she was, but just another insane person. One who was so insane she liked human meat. But if that was so, why was she so strong? How could she move so effortlessly? Perhaps it was the strength of a madwoman. She had heard of these strange things. She rubbed the skin around the eyes between her fingers. It crumbled. Little cells giving up in dryness. And then she saw it. Skin removed, left new skin underneath. The eye lines were gone. At corners of the woman's eyes was smooth baby skin. The new cells had pushed out the old, making them even more wrinkly. Sheila turned the woman's head. The other eye had a translucent white patch just where the eyelids met. With her fingertips, Sheila lifted it off and chewed it like a snack. When the woman regained consciousness and saw her eyes, felt her skin, and turned this way and that to see how beautiful she was, she looked from different angles, full face forward, as best. She had one response to what she would do for Dr. Sheila Feinberg. Anything.
Good, said Sheila. Now I know you have friends, and I want to help them too in a special way. I'm starting a special clinic.
You'll be rich.
Sheila smiled. Rich was for humans. She wondered if her species would have a form of currency someday. There were no thoughts about her species being a better species than man, or worse. It didn't matter. Sheila Feinberg understood then, logically,
what she had understood instinctively since the transformation, and what almost every soldier knows who has seen combat. One kills not because one is right or brave or even angry. One kills to live. One kills others because they are others. Despite all the reasons humans gave for wars, Sheila understood all those reasons were wrong. Humans fought not for justice or even conquest, but because they perceived another person as simply another person. A border, a language difficulty, different clothes called uniforms, all made it easy to tell who were the others. She had never studied political science or history as a student, but she knew she understood more about humans now than anyone who had ever majored in those supposed sciences. Perhaps her species would be luckier and not fight among itself as humans did, but reserve its efforts for other species. "Yes, rich," agreed Sheila. Let the human woman think she wanted money. Sheila needed a young girl with big breasts, a young girl with a shapely nose, a young girl with flaxen yellow hair, a young girl with smooth and tender hips.
"Tender?
I mean smooth and full," said Sheila.
"That's quite an order for one girl."
"Oh no, different girls, but Caucasians."
"Your method only works with similar races?" the woman asked.
"On the contrary, there really isn't any difference between the races. It's a cosmetic thing. Who'd want to put a black breast on a white chest, or vice versa?"
"How interesting," said the woman, not all that interested. She pulled up at the top of her left breast. She imagined what it would look like young again. She imagined what it would look like very big. She had always said she was glad she didn't have those big floppy breasts. She had always said big breasts were an American distortion, a cultural prejudice not shared by really civilized people.
"I know, a 42 double D cup," said the woman, grinning. She imagined those battlements parading before her and felt quite excited. Sheila had other problems. She hadn't eaten for a day. She fell on an old woman carrying a loaf of bread. Sheila left the bread. The next day, the young girls arrived. Within 24 hours, Sheila Feinberg had the sort of features her mother had once called gaudy. The nose had lost its prolonging bump. The chest curved massively. The hips came out with soft invitation. Her hair was long and golden blonde. She could not be recognized by the police anymore, but even more important, with her new beauty, she now had an awesome power over the male human. Let the government send its best after her. First they would have to find and recognize her, then they would have to resist her physical charms. Being searched for now wasn't the worst of her problems. She had to find a mate. The day had become quite itchy for her. She restrained an urge to rub her back against door jams and put her scent around Greater Boston. She was, quite simply, in heat. She was ready to breed. She had two more dinners, and when the carcasses were found, bellies eaten out, agents from the federal government came pouring into the city. Secret Services men came, although the crime had nothing to do with the U.S. Treasury. FBI men, although the crime had nothing to do with federal laws. CIA scientists examined the corpses, although it was against the law for the agency to operate internally. The mayor of the city, faced with a problem he neither understood nor had a remote chance of coping with, went on television to tell Greater Boston,
"We have stepped up surveillance. We have increased our deployment forces, and we are working toward what we expect to be a significant step in stemming this terror."
What he really meant was that the city, along with everyone else, was spending more money. Those who survived would be taxed more in the future. It was summer, and the humans of the city were preparing for their annual fall rioting based on color. But something in their midst knew more about them than they did. She knew all humans were alike. She also knew that, counting the gestation period, the reproductive process might be too slow. "Perhaps," thought Sheila, "I can make others like me in a faster way." And by others like her, she did not mean just big, bosomed blondes.